Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Hopeless Romantic Podcast. This is our fifth episode, and it is entitled The Anatomy of a Sex Scene, so you can guess what we're going to be talking about today. I am Austin Chant.
I am Amanda Jean.
And this is our show.
So as you can probably guess, today's episode is going to be dealing with some pretty explicit language and topics. So if that's something you need to check out for, go ahead and do that. I think the first thing to do would be to establish what types of sex scenes there are. Obviously, the first thing that might come to mind is erotic romance, but there's also any level of heat in terms of sex scenes from fade to black all the way up to sort of the mild historical Harlequin-esque flowery metaphor language. And then there's the more explicit but still fairly tame. Like, they might use words like dick or cock or clit rather than like flowering petals, moist folds, pearl, or like rigid staff, his manhood. I've read a lot of Harlequin style erotica. Not even erotica. That's not erotica. I've read a lot of Harlequins in my life. So that's sort of where my mind goes when I think about sex scenes, unfortunately. You would think that I would have trained myself out of that, having read so much porn in the queer romance genre. But no, not really. I still automatically go to like the throbbing manhood thing.
To be fair, there is plenty of that in the queer romance genre as well. I've seen it.
You've seen it with your own two eyes. Did you just say you felt it? You felt a disturbance in the force. So I think we all know, I would hope that if you're listening to this podcast, you've picked up a book that has a sex scene in it, regardless of its heat rating. If it's a new surprise to you, I'm very sorry. This is your exposure. Us talking about terrible, terrible euphemisms. And that's not to say that you can't use language that isn't explicit and not have it be effective. Austin, do you have anything to say on the subject of types of sex scenes? Because clearly I don't.
I see how it is. Yes, I do. I absolutely do. We're going to get into the sort of what the heat levels actually are, but I tend to just think of it as what is appropriate and well-matched to the story you're telling. Sometimes it might not really be relevant what happens in the bedroom or wherever they're having sex. And that might be where you go for a fade to black, or you just don't even mention it. Like, obviously, you might be writing romance with ace characters, and you might be writing something that is by necessity not physically intimate, or not at least sexually intimate. You can still have physical intimacy without sexual intimacy. And so that might be a case where, regardless of what type of romance you're writing, you're not going to have a sex scene, or you're going to have a fade to black, or you might be writing straight up erotica where it's assumed that there's going to be a lot of erotic content and you're going to foreground that. And you're going to use language that's going to be usually more direct and more explicit because that's what people are there for. And I think throughout all of those, though, the language you use might be different. The expectations of the readership might be different, but there's still good and bad writing practices that go into whatever. It's not like one of them is bad and one of them is good.
I think that's true, having read both, where I've read some really G-rated stuff that fell flat, and I've read some erotica that was just as nuanced and focused on characterization and the crafting of the story as any other non-erotic content. So it really just does depend on who writes it and what they have in them to write. Like, if you're not comfortable writing erotic content, I think that shows. And if you're not used to writing something without porn, me, that shows. So it really just is finding your own comfort zone and working within that. I will say, though, there are presses where there is a minimum heat rating, and you don't want to go for those presses if you're not comfortable with the minimum heat rating. You should definitely, you know, look at their submission calls and their submission policies and see what it is that you would be most happy and comfortable writing. Also, for readers, invaluable tool. Most presses, and I'm sure, you know, if there's a noob here, hey, I'm giving you some great information. If you're not a noob, I'm telling you things you already know. But there are heat ratings, and you can sometimes sort them by heat rating. And a lot of people have their erotic romance categorized as a completely different like subheading on their site. So you kind of have to find it really useful.
Yeah. Amanda, I was actually thinking, since you are an editor and you work for multiple different presses, you, I know, have a lot of experience with kind of what makes a heat rating.
Yeah.
And how that can, obviously, that can vary very widely depending on the press. But there are some, it's not just a matter of, it's not vague often what goes into a heat rating. It's actually pretty, it's explicit, if you will.
Flowcharts.
Yeah, literal flowcharts. I've glanced at them. But yeah, I wonder if you could talk about, like, so we can be really clear about what we're talking about when we describe, like, erotica versus erotic romance. What's, like, blazing versus, I don't know, kindling.
Tender, I don't know. I work for a couple of presses that do have pretty rigorous heat levels, and they define those very rigorously as well. I'll say off the top of my head, some presses only use, like, this contains some erotic content, or this contains explicit content, or they aren't as specific with their heat rating. And some people are, like, they have this down to a decimal point. And I actually have spreadsheets that I refer to double check or declare what heat rating something is. Sometimes it will depend on the kind of language used, like the frequency of the word cock. Sometimes it will depend on the sex act. It will depend, like, how many different sex acts there are and, like, I guess how they measure how explicit they are. There's a difference between anal sex and figging, which, by the way, was a beautiful and revealing conversation when I got to explain to you what figging was and myself.
I learned a lot.
I kind of knew, but I didn't realize. It was a great moment, actually. I felt pleased.
But yeah, so for example, I think in a lot of places too, like BDSM will hike up a heat rating.
It will automatically hike up a heat rating.
Whereas if you're having, I guess, relatively vanilla sex, like, then it depends on maybe the type of language you're using.
The language, yeah. And then I would say, too, I've seen a lot of polyamory be automatically hiked up because it's multiple sex partners. I've also seen, it depends on the heat rating, like, what you're allowed to portray in some situations. Not really allowed, but, like, what the guidelines say. Like, one or two presses I know definitely say, like, well, for this heat rating or for this imprint, some imprints have different heat ratings, the main characters can't have sex with other people on screen. It has to be sex between the main characters, the love interests only, which is an interesting facet of the genre as a whole, because there is an emphasis in many books on having, like, the love be sort of pure and physically untainted, which is interesting. And
super fidelity.
Yeah.
But it's not even necessarily just fidelity. It's like you can't be interested in other people past, present, future. Yeah. I do think it's very, like, there's a lot of room, I think, for a conversation about what should be considered more erotic, especially because, I mean, obviously, when you're looking at the queer romance genre, this doesn't factor in as much, but there's a huge history of anything with queer characters or homoerotic content or whatever being categorized as more explicit than straight cis folks, just on the basis that somehow that is more deviant, more erotic, more scandalous. I wouldn't necessarily always push back against it, depending on the book, but there might be a book with BDSM practices that are not sexual at all. There might be kink present in things that is not explicitly sexual. It might be very charged or intimate in a different way.
Yeah, and that's interesting because I don't think a lot of presses would know how to market that or would even be interested in that. And that, to me, would be a really potentially cool story. So that is where I think the heat rating and the heat requirements become problems, when it's getting in the way of telling a story because it doesn't quite tick off all of these boxes. I mean, they're there for good reason. They're incredibly thorough, and they let the reader know what they're getting into, and they also let the author know what they need to write. So it is useful, but it does, I think, get in the way of some fiction, because what if you're writing a story that has sort of the usual amount, which I don't know what that would be, but, like, let's pretend there is a usual amount of porn in something, and they realize that they're falling short of a heat rating, and then it comes to this place where they sort of have to shoe in more porn, or I guess amp it up. And I was going to talk about that too, talking about when porn or when a sex scene, because it's not necessarily porn. I'm sorry for being so cavalier, but when so casual about the pornography that gets into this idea of shoehorning in sex scenes, which happens a lot. I've seen, and I don't know if it's because of either a propensity for writing erotica that means you sort of churn it out, or if it gets back to the idea that someone might not be entirely comfortable with something and so they're not really feeling it. But I do notice in some stories there's a surplus of porn that isn't tied into plot progression and isn't tied into character dynamic. Like, you could literally find replace the character names with anybody else and it would be essentially unchanged. Even in erotica, that doesn't really have its place. I feel like that is when we get into the realm of bad erotica. I hate to paint it with a definitive brush like that, but I really do think that when you're getting to a point where it could be anyone, that you missed the point. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, and people feel free to tell me how wrong I am in excessive detail, but I feel like one of the draws to erotica is how sizzling the dynamic is between the two characters or the three or whoever, the three or four who are having sex. And if you don't have that inherent tension and you don't portray it on the screen, I mean, maybe someone out there is really impressed by, I don't know, maybe like your technical prowess. I suppose someone would be impressed by your technical prowess, or would be impressed by how many times you managed to say dirty words.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think of it as, like, even if I am interested in, say, a particular narrative arc or kink or whatever that's present, I'm really most interested in a sex scene in the dynamic between specifically the people the story is about. And if that isn't there, it falls totally flat for me. No matter what else is there, I want to know, you know, if it's about a kink even, I want to know what it is about these people that they are that they are into that, and like what it is that draws them to it, and why this partner, and why this place and this time. And if that charge isn't there, it just doesn't hold my interest. It just feels like you have some dolls and you're kind of together.
Yeah, it's very detached. It's very detached. It's like it's almost like a veil goes up between the reader and the story. Like, I feel like readers want to immerse themselves in the story, or at least I do.
It's kind of like how, you know how like every goddamn lesbian movie from a certain time period has the same sex scene where it's just like the slow pan across vague bodies, maybe.
Yeah, where it's like, is that a thigh or a shoulder?
Yeah, it's like a thigh moving, lips, a back, and it's all like, and like Enya starts playing.
Disembodied body parts to new age music.
And I at that point, I'm always like, ooh, yes, I love these lesbians. I'm excited for this scene. And then it's always like, well, I basically just watched Shadow Puppets for a while. I got nothing of what this moment meant to them, or like
that one shot of her big toe just spoke to me on a spiritual level. But that, I mean, that is the same effect you get in sex scenes, erotic, you know, highly erotic or not, where there is not a connection with the characters, or it's just in there because you were trying to include a sex scene as a reward for the reader, or you felt like you had to, or you're trying to, you know, you're trying to make sure you have in enough sex scenes to meet your heat rating.
Which, on the other hand, I hate that I'm this person, but then I'm also the person who is like, reward me.
Yeah, we're very demanding in that, and we're very contrary, because on one hand I'm saying, you should never do this. And on the other hand, I'm like, but where's my sex scene? I've read so much of this story and there's
Yeah,
no porn.
If there's two characters I really like, I'm like, you could just have this whole book be sex scenes. But then, you know, it's actually the context and the narrative that makes me want that.
Yeah, and if it's sex scene from the get-go, like, you, how do you place yourself in the, I mean, it would have to be extremely well done for me to place myself in this character's head if it were sex from the get-go, because, I mean, sex is, it's almost like a worse version of an action scene, because you have to convey so much and things are happening. So you have to spend time not only developing your character's reactions to things. I love that we're like, this is going to have really explicit language. And I'm like, things are happening.
Someone put the thingy in the other thingy.
tab A went into slot B. But I do feel like when you're writing a sex scene, you have to be mindful of not only what is going on in terms of like what body parts are doing what sex act is being performed, and also what is going on in the characters' heads and how this is affecting the pace of your story overall. Taking a swift left turn from this, I wanted to talk about like pet peeves in terms of things I see in fiction, in more erotic content, I should say, not just in fiction.
A left turn into everything we hate in books, just in general.
Everything. We're going to be here for 4 hours. But I will say, like, long disclaimer, I'm not saying this necessarily as my capacity as an editor. I'm saying it as a reader. I'm saying it as a whiny person rather than someone who has the sort of editorial authority to tell you to stop doing something. I will still occasionally, you know, call some things out and make impassioned pleas. But generally, things that I wish would stop in sex scenes. And I think the top of that is there's always time for lube. And there's always time for actual lube and not a bizarre lube substitute. I have read literally mustard as lube.
No!
Yeah. I think that's the thing I always sort of go to when I think about terrible choices.
At that point, just I'm looking around my room, like I've got a little, okay, this sounds bad, I was gonna say I've got a bottle of whiskey and you might as well just use that, but then I have to explain it's a very small bottle of whiskey and I'm not drinking it right now.
If you're gonna use mustard, why not use mayonnaise, which actually has some slick properties?
Yeah. I've got some nail polish here you could try out. I've got a jar full of glitter water.
Isn't that what you would use as lube every day of your life?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. Use it's got some glue water mixed in, so I don't, oh, just Jesus, couldn't possibly go wrong. You know, it honestly, to me, like, I get that, like, the thing you're trying to convey there is like, oh, it's the heat of the moment. They're just so eager to get their hands on each other.
Well, also, there's scenes sometimes where they're not readily, like, where lube isn't traditional, sold in a jar. There are jar lubes, but like sold in a lube container. There are situations where characters, they don't have lube readily to hand and they can't go get it. Or there are historical or fantasy pieces where they use something else's lube because that's the best they can do. And like that's completely understandable. However, if you are writing a historical fiction piece, I would caution you against using spit as lube, just in life as well.
Or no lube.
Or no lube. Yeah, no lube is worse. Because while you can do it, and people have historically used spit as lube, if you're writing, well, it depends on the type of sex you're writing also, but we're kind of assuming there's some sort of penetration going on here if you're using lube, and it's probably penetration of butts. It could be other things too, but it's probably butt penetration. I caution people against using spit as lube in fiction because there are so many things that can go wrong. Spit dries.
Infections. And also, it's just, to me as a reader, I am not going to be sitting there saying like, oh man, they used proper lube, I'm so bored. I'm going to be sitting there like, oh, thank goodness they went and, I don't know, found olive oil historically used a lot as lube. If you thrown in a side where it's like, oh, and they had in their bag conveniently a vial of oil or something, I'll be like, oh, good.
Yeah. And I would say also for more modern stories, I also am a huge fan of condom, like consistent and healthy condiment use.
Back which is why we're
getting back to the mustard and the mayonnaise. I'm a huge fan of when people actually include healthy and responsible condom use in stories. And I realize there are maybe some who shy away from that because they don't. I mean, society kind of tells us that condom use isn't sexy. And like, whatever, that's fine. You can think that. But I also feel like your average person, at least I would say, I was actually talking about this with a friend of mine who's much older than me, who, when they started reading erotica and when they watched porn, there was not condom use because this was pre HIV AIDS. And then after, it was like startling to see condoms in porn. And I think we're kind of circling back around to, not to talk about the porn industry at length, but I think we're circling back around from, I would say, a lot of people using condoms in porn and even mentioning condoms in fiction to not again. Like there's a lot of bareback porn and there's a lot of bareback fiction. And I'm wondering if it's just like, oh, we don't think it's cool to use condoms. We don't think it's sexy to write about putting the condom on or getting the condom or having, like, you know what I mean? Or like it's more intimate to not use a condom. And like, for real, if you have a situation in which your characters are comfortable and safe not using condoms, great. But I don't feel like that should be the default.
And I will say, you know, as for it not being sexy, like, I'm sorry, you're an erotica author. Make it sexy. You can make anything sexy. You can make, like, hand-holding sexy. You can make putting on a condom sexy. This is not beyond your powers. You write erotica, put the condom on, make it
hot. It reflects a lot of people's real lives because a lot of people use dental dams and a lot of people use protection, like, to eliminate it because you think it slows, you know, the sexing down or it isn't sexy or people aren't going to want to read about that. One, you're helping to normalize a healthy habit. And two, that actually does reflect the lives of a lot of people. And if you're like me, when you're reading a sex scene that's like contemporary and these people haven't talked about the last time they were checked for STDs, and they aren't talking about what it means, you know, for their relationship. Like, if they're just hooking up and there's not even a mention of condoms, I think for some people that could be outright triggery. And for me, it's like, it rips me out of the scene and it makes me worry about the characters. I'm like, are you guys okay? I'll show up like a condom fairy and just like deposit them into the scene and then float away. Like,
yeah, you actually brought up a good point there that, like, not only do people not use condoms a lot in erotica or any sex scene, when we're talking penetrative sex, I've almost never seen it for like oral sex or anything else, and especially not for folks with vaginas like dental dams. Almost never in anything.
No, that's what I was thinking of, because I have seen people in CIS-MM and even CIS-MF use condoms for oral sex and make it a part of the scene, but I have not seen that very much with dental dams. I have seen a fair bit of dental dam use in lesbian erotica, but even then, it's still not really used that much. There's just a lot of questionable, like, sexual hygiene practices in porn if we really, like, sit down and think about it. Not telling you people how to live your lives, but I feel like normalizing not only condoms, but, like, contraceptives and stuff like that in fiction is something that is a cool thing to do. And
yeah, we can use our powers for good.
Moving on from lube, this is the point where Austin and my friendship breaks down. We have legitimately had 3 or 4 impassioned/drunk/yelling discussions, shouting on some of it on Twitter about this next topic. And you might think, like, oh, what is this topic that has so split the nation? What is this hot button issue? And it's
about the time that Amanda was editing for me and insisted on inserting the adjective thick in front of cock and I scream.
You literally told me. I was like, hey, you should use an adjective here. It doesn't even have to be thick. And you literally dramatically, I think, yelled, I have never described a penis in my life.
I'm not about that filthy business.
I'm about that filthy business, apparently. But I should say, like, this isn't something that I'm going to, like, this isn't the hill I've chosen to die on, except it is. This is apparently, like, my legacy, is yelling at my friends and all and sundry about dickscription. And I would even say discrimination.
Okay, so I'm going to lay it out here.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. This is absolutely my personal opinion. I know that people have wildly different preferences about what they read and the type of language they use. I am totally uninterested in descriptions of genitalia at all times, unless it is immediately relevant to a person's experience, but not the person reading, to the person in the sex scene. Unless it's immediately relevant to their experience, I don't care. I don't want to know what anything looks like. I don't want to know what color it is. I don't want to know how veiny it is.
It's so ambiguous. You don't know what things could be doing.
Well, I want to know what they're doing. I don't know if character B is riding a huge dick and wants to remark on how big it is. Fine. Sure. Go for it. But just in general, like, it does nothing for me. And so I almost never actually describe any of the junk in anything I'm writing, even though I write a lot of porn. Like, I love writing sex scenes. I tend to have on the upper end of how many I probably should in any given project. But in terms of that type of explicitness, that's where I kind of check out. Like, I will be explicit in any other way. And I'm also kind of that way about Dirty Talk, but that's...
Oh, yeah. Like, again, this is all about personal preference. I just... I thought it was funny that this started the War of the Roses between us, when it's something that both of us are like, no, it totally depends on what you like and what you like to read and write and if it's appropriate for, like, the POV you're in. But at the same time, I'm also like, what do you have against dicks?
We say that, and then we just start snarling at each other from across the room, like, and you thought it was appropriate to put thick in there?
Really? We debate the really? Semantics of, like, and then we literally had a conversation. I'm very sorry for rehashing this on a podcast, but we had a conversation wherein, because you were like, why would this character think of his own? And by the way, the character was clothed at the time, so I did concede that he probably wouldn't be thinking of his own dick as thick if he couldn't even look at it in the moment. But I think the point I was making is that there are cis dudes who think about their penis and talk about their penis very casually in very explicit terms. And there's also, like, if you read cis MM erotica written by cis dudes, it, and, you know, ladies too, and NB folks too, but mostly cis dudes, it is very thorough in its description. I would say that that's a hallmark of a lot of cis dude MM written by cis dude MM that I've read, is that it is very thorough and detailed in its description. Not for everybody, but definitely a strong presence. And I'm not a person who enjoys, like, really over the top language. Like, if I have to read about, like, turgid meaty poles, I'm probably not that interested. But I do think that there is...
You're so gentle about that. Just probably not.
Just probably. I mean, I'm not going to never say never about turgid meaty poles. But that's just not my favorite type of language. And it is some people's favorite type of language. So I don't want to, you know, completely dump on that. But it's not mine. And I think it's funny that I'm, like, the middle ground between Austin's, like, I guess, puritanical lack of description and the stuff you'd find on nifty.org, which is where I'm just like, hey, so genitalia looks different. A lot of the time. You actually raised a good point when we were talking about description, and you were like, I don't see this level of detail when you're talking about vulva. And you're right. You don't see this level of detail when you're talking about vulva. Vulva discrimination. Vulscrimination.
I have seen it, but I have never seen, like, the level of loving devotion in a description of a clitoris that I have seen about a penis. I think a little bit of it, too, might come from being interested in writing for a trans readership and just, I don't know. I don't really know how to say this, but kind of wanting to step away from...
A fetishization of genitalia.
Fetishization and strict categorization of genitalia and bodies. So some of that is where it comes from for me, but I also have read porn by other trans authors who are very, very explicit, so I don't want to be like, oh, that's just what trans people do. It could, I suppose, be my personal preference.
Which is, again, fair.
But I maintain, Amanda, that he was in subspace and... had his pants on and did not care that his own dick was thick.
I agree with that. I still just, like, we got to talk about the fact that some dicks are circumcised and some aren't, and some are thick and some aren't, and some are differently colored than others, and some are...
It's for other people, and I accept that in my heart.
There are some dicks... There are some dicks that there is a lot of pre-ejaculate fluid coming out of them at any given time.
See, that's fine.
There are some dicks that don't have a lot of pre-ejaculate fluid coming out of them.
That's fine, but it means nothing to me. To me, it's filler. To me, it's like, okay.
Oh, dick is filler.
I don't really distinguish between junk.
Yeah, like, fair enough. And I do think there is, and, you know, just in talking about this, I think there is... a weird fixation on genitalia. Sorry, a weird fixation judges everyone who cares about what junk is described like. I think there is a preoccupation with what people's genitalia looks like and if it conforms to, like, unrealistic beauty standards for genitalia. But no, I mean, that actually ties into, you know, the porn industry as a whole and what you look at in terms of their selection of genitalia, like, and the type of porn that they produce. It's very aesthetically similar, and actual junk isn't like that. And I think that's actually part of why I am pro dick and vulva scription, because I think that, again, normalizing something that when you read or you see, like, mainstream erotica or porn, it's all kind of like, they aren't unique snowflakes. They're all sort of variations ends on a theme. And I feel like that can make people who don't have junk that looks like that internalize some stuff. And so I'm actually for talking about junk that doesn't fit the industry standard mold.
But on the other hand, unfortunately, I think those same standards tend to crop up in our genre as well. I don't know if I've ever read a description that was his dick was kind of cutely uneven.
I have.
Probably because I've fled at the first sight of the description.
Someone said the word vain. I'm out of here. No, I won't say that that's standard. It's not. But I feel like it could be if we take the torch up and systematically describe every piece of genitalia in every story. But no, here's the thing. Okay, let's say your story is about two cis dudes and it's in the POV of a cis dude in the middle of a scene. I'm not saying this is the case for everybody. It's not. But I feel like there is more propensity to be aware of your own junk and the junk of your partner than I guess otherwise, because the cis dudes I've known have been into the idea of take that thick cock.
Well, I don't know if I agree. I don't think I agree with that, because I it's not that I wouldn't be want to be aware of the junk of everybody in the scene if it's relevant and important, but it's more a matter of what details I find important. I want to know everything about what people are experiencing in that, but a lot of times there's something that strikes me as kind of voyeuristic and extraneous about some of the ways that those descriptions come out. And I'm just sitting there this tells me nothing about who these people are or why they're into it. Or I just want to get back to the feelings they're feeling.
Get me back to the emotions and the sensations. No, I was going to say, there's been a lot of bullshit about how men are turned on by visual things and women, and there's air quotes around all of these, and women are turned on by laundry soap. But no, there's been a lot of discussion about how women aren't as visually oriented. And I don't actually think, I'm going to call bullshit on that. I don't think that's true. I think men are socialized to be more receptive to visual cues. I don't think that it's an inherent thing. Maybe it is. I don't know, says the not doctor. But I think that that actually plays into a lot of porn and erotica in terms of what certain audiences and what certain writers will key into. Because if you're looking at a sex scene as being an expression of something visual, yeah, you're going to spend a lot of time talking about the shape of the dick. I don't really have an opinion for or against it, because some people really do enjoy it. I just think that sometimes I want to know what kind of junk we're working with. And I do not limit that to just dicks, by the way. I think that there should be a push for, if we're talking about dick description, we should be talking about vulvas too, because they are just as special.
And clit-scription.
Yes, clit-scription, yes. Clit-scription, yes. That sounds a lot better. I also, getting back to the idea that we should talk about junk that doesn't fit the mold of what people find, I guess, most attractive. And I don't know who decided that. What fucking committee got together and they're all labia are going to look like this in porn, and all foreskin or lack of foreskin is going to look like this in porn. Whoever made that decision was wrong. So we're going to put description to bed right now. I will say, tuck it in, read it a story. I will say, if you want to talk about description or vulvascription, clitscription with us, feel free to do so, because I think it is it's a community discussion in many ways. I think we need to share with the class, because I don't think that I adequately expressed the opinion of people who are into super explicit description. I can't say description anymore. It's all description and discrimination in my life.
Showcasing diversity.
Yeah. Diversity above adversity. Yeah, I think I didn't do a great job of adequately expressing why some people are into that. And I'm even saying, I'm pretty tame. I'm middle of the road. It might be appropriate in the case of someone who's going to go down on someone else, or going to rim someone else, or just noticing their partner's enjoyment of something. I feel when you're describing someone else's junk in the POV character, that's fine. That's appropriate. It may be, and Austin's had a point here, it may be slightly less appropriate to look down at your own junk and give a thorough accounting of it. But there are people who do that and are into that, and that factors into how they enjoy sex. So that is appropriate for its own thing, too. Stop sighing. Stop judging people who like looking at their junk and thinking
I'm
about
not
their junk.
Judging.
You're kink shaming everyone.
It's more just that I struggle because I'm like, I try not to put myself into everything I write, but I don't relate to such a degree.
So I'm very sorry for traumatizing you and everyone with that. Let's actually switch gears again and talk about something that will be even more alienating to some listeners. Now is the time for something we both agree on. What a shock. There's a prescription from certain houses that cum is supposed to be spelled C-U-M or supposed to be spelled C-U-M in certain circumstances. Like, I know of houses that say the verb is C-O-M-E, but the product is C-U-M. And I wish that would stop. And that's not me. Again, I'm not saying that as an editor, although I will occasionally. Well, I also think it depends. Here's where I'm going to derail this. I think it depends on the type of story you're writing, because if you're writing something that's like set in Victorian England and it's got like a little bit of the purple prose and like, I don't know, you're writing about aristocracy and you're writing about this torrid love affair between these two. Like, let me just disappear thinking about this. But you're writing about this and your language is so specific. And then when it gets to the sex scene, you know, you're spelling it C-U-M, which I think of as quite contemporary and quite like specific to erotica. It's going to jerk me out of the scene. And in some erotica, maybe the thing that you like is cum spelled C-U-M. I don't like that. And I'm sorry. I don't like it. And I don't think that it works in stuff that is in erotica. Like, I feel like that's my line. I don't know. This is semantics, basically. This is just me saying this is a thing I don't like. And I was actually trying to put my finger on the reason why I don't like it. I just don't think it's an attractive looking word. It's a weird word. And it looks like slang in a way that I don't like. Because C-O-M-E is like a word in existence without even that connotation. C-O-M-E is like, I'm going to come over. We're going to have a good time. And it also means other things. But C-U-M doesn't have, like, it looks like someone is texting one-handed and didn't want to spell the whole thing. Like, it looks weird to me, and I'm very sorry that I have these aesthetic preferences.
Yeah, I think that's why, like, the only time I think that I have not been, like, thrown out of a story by it is maybe a certain narrator who I could see, like, in their mind spelling it that way. That's, like, the one time when I'm like, okay. But in prose that doesn't have, like, a heavy narrative voice to justify that, I'm like, ugh, nope.
Again, if you're a person who's super into C-U-M, I'm sorry for alienating you.
You're okay. Your preferences are valid.
Shine on. I'm really sorry. I'm actually starting to feel bad about how strongly I feel about this because, like, there are plenty of people who like it. I'm just over here like, no!
I feel like I've already mentioned this maybe on the podcast once, but I am always amazed at how inane the hills I choose to die on are. Like, truly. I mean, I feel so strongly about this, and it's not that big a deal. Like,
it's really not. Well, I will say it's like a selfish reader entitlement thing, because I've given people editorial comments where I'm just like, my personal preference, because I'm a jackass, is for you to not use this because A, B, or C, or sometimes I don't even explain. I, you know, insert my own personal preferences into people's lives. But I also do think, like, I wouldn't do that out of nowhere. I've left cum, C-U-M alone plenty of times. But I feel like, again, if you're writing a story that has a certain style to it, or it has a certain, like you said, the narrative presence of the POV character is not quite as fully developed, or like the voice isn't the same. Like, using it in a story set in feudal Japan seems weird to me. Like, and so that would be where I would say, hi, I as a person and an editor think that this is out of place, and here's why. But I also think that it does, I mean, I feel slightly guilty because it does harken back to the fact that I don't think that C-U-M is good.
It is so funny because, like, I've had you edit and be like, rewrite all this, this whole chapter, basically. Rewrite all this beginning of this, or this doesn't work completely, rework it throughout the thing.
I'm nicer than that.
No, yes, but you know, that's what you've been telling me to do, and I'm always like, oh yeah, fine. And then you're like, thick cock, and I'm like,
Amanda. How do you literally, you were scandalized. You literally came out to yell at me. Screamed things at me. I screamed them back. This wasn't one-sided. But you were just like basically calling me like a filthy pervert because I dare to know or wonder or presume that a cock may be thick. You were just like, how in my life I have never... It's like I was just asking you to try crystal meth.
I think the point I'm trying to get at is that you shouldn't take this as seriously as we do.
It's probably not gospel. No, but taking it seriously is just like us like weeping, like literally just weeping on the floor about how dumb we are. So we should stop kink shaming long enough to talk about some shit that is actually applicable to the nitty-gritty, the anatomy of a sex scene. I was going to talk about movement and action progression. Action's progressing. I was going to talk about how movement and action progression in sex scene is a little weird and how it kind of, I think, mirrors action scenes in that you have to be uber aware of where your characters are in space and physics and gravity. Everyone, I think, has read the sex scene where you sort of squint at the page and you wonder, wait a minute, character A just had his pants on and now they're... The only thing that came to mind was fisting. I'm so sorry. Now they're fisting. But no, you get that moment where you're like, wait a minute, weren't they in the living room and character A had his pants on and now they're in the bedroom and one of them's fucking the other like upside down? Like, how did that happen? And that's the extreme version of wondering, oh, geez, something happened that the author didn't describe. But there's also the flip side of that where when you're in the middle of a sex scene, some of this might not get noticed, but one minute you had someone, you know, with both of their hands occupied and they were occupied with like holding something or doing something. And then the next, you know, line, one hand or two hands is mysteriously free, or you forgot you said that they were doing something with a hand and then it's doing two things at once. So that is something I really think is important to look out for. And like, yeah, your editor will catch a lot of it, but sometimes they won't. And sometimes it makes it to print and your readers are like, wait a minute, how many hands does this character have? All the hands.
Yeah, and I think the blocking of a sex scene can be really important, but it's possible to go too little or too much, I think. Too little, you can get kind of lost in a vague space where, like, things are happening, but you have no idea what.
Yeah. There's also the like you said, like, the too much looks like, and then they proceeded to, and it's really choppy. And I will say, as a human being who writes sex scenes, I have conscripted my friends into getting into very you have conscripted people into getting into very hilarious situations. Like, literally, I was at my friend's house and I was like, I'm running a sex scene. I need to do something real creepy right now. Can you get off the couch? I didn't make them sit here for this. I was writing someone giving another person a blowjob while the blowjob receiver was seated. And I was like, would your knees hit the couch? Like, would this happen? Like, how would this work? And then I've made my friend like stand there. I'm going to hug you and I need to see if like I can reach a thing. And then you and our beloved audio producer Daria have gotten into some pretty tricky situations that I have photographic evidence of.
Unfortunately for me, at one point Daria needed to know, like, could you comfortably pin somebody's arms with your knees without like cutting off all blood to their
while face fucking them?
Well, okay, yeah, you didn't have to go so explicit. Yes, Amanda, I'm a tender flower.
So I think that it's necessary for writers, even if they're not making their friends get into very uncomfortable positions with them, they should at least have an idea of, I feel like most authors have a mental image of what they're doing. They kind of know, okay, well, this did start in the living room and then it progresses here and they lose their shirt here and then they're in the bedroom and doggy style or whatever. But really sitting down and when you write it, tracing back over, okay, so here's where the clothes, oh, wait, no, I forgot to say that he took his pants off, or I forgot to say that she took her bra off.
Yeah, I think if you want to know everything, it's kind of like with any character backstory or whatever, like, you know all of the details and then you choose which ones your reader needs at any given moment. So you should know not only like the blocking of the scene. You should know where all the hands are at all times, where the clothes are, and
all hands on deck.
Yes. You should know where everything is, but you should also know, like, what is for each character involved, the, like, emotional arc of this, what is the progression of basically everything in the scene, and then pick and choose which details aren't going to be important to reader, because all of them are not.
They're not. And also, I mean, there's the clever workaround of this where you don't have to laboriously describe what happened to all of their clothes and all of their hands. It's saying, like, in a hurry, they divested themselves of clothing.
Yeah, because you can do that. And I think it's good when authors do that. Just, you don't want it to be confusing and you don't want to get bogged down in irrelevancies. Just, you don't need to walk us through, like, pace by pace every single thing. You can make some shortcuts.
Yeah, and it depends on the type of sex scene you're writing, because if you're writing something where the clothes coming off is integral to, like, the hotness of the scene, like, it's a borderline striptease, yeah, you're going to want to talk about that. But you're also not going to want to belabor the point, so it's like, and then he bent over and pulled his right sock off, and he threw it in the direction of the hamper, and then he bent over and took off his left sock and threw that in the direction of the hamper, but it missed, and it landed on the tile of the bat. Like, don't, maybe not.
And maybe you don't need, like, to describe every single button being unbuttoned.
No. Or even that the buttons got unbuttoned, just that, like, the shirt was taken off. I don't know. It's a funny thing, because it really does depend on the scene at hand. But I do think that when you underwrite, it can be confusing. And when you overwrite, you really do get into that, like, beat by beat thing that isn't helpful when you're trying to get to, like, an intense sexually charged scene. But that's also to say, like, hilarious things happen when people have sex. And if you want to reflect that in your story, which you might want to. I think that that's cute and endearing and, like, realistic. You can talk about, like, someone can't get their skinny jeans off. Like, things happen. You know, aside from wandering body parts, I wanted to talk about how genre affects sex scenes, which we touched on a little bit, but I also wanted to talk about the mood of sex scenes. I guess that also ties in a little bit to the heat ratings that we discussed.
I'll bring it all together.
It's all just tied up in a neat little bow of confusing. But no, I mean, when you're writing a sex scene in something that is, like, high fantasy, or you're writing a sex scene in something that is contemporary erotica, or you're writing a sex scene in something that's, like, steampunk, they're all going to look different. Being aware, and it's almost like when you're sitting down to world build, you should think about the way that people have sex and, like, the aids they might use and the type of lube they might use and the type of contraceptives and, like, the societal attitudes towards sex. Like, it's all part and parcel of that whole thing. And that's why when you are reading a story that seems or a sex scene that seems shoehorned into a story, you're realizing, wait a minute, I don't think the author did their, you know, I don't think they did due diligence and sat down and thought about how sex works in the context of the broader world. Like, they figured out their financial system. They figured out their transit. They figured out their religion. I feel like the best kind of writing is something that hints at a deeper well of knowledge, because you're communicating things to the readers without explicitly sitting down and expositing, in this society, sex before marriage is the only kind of sex there is. In this society, oral sex is considered highly sinful, but
anal's a-okay.
Anal's great. Anal's the only type of sex. You know what I mean? Your characters will internalize things in their world the same way that we all do. So if you're writing a sex scene that, like, oh, hey, you know, if you're writing contemporary, oral sex is pretty much par for the course. But if you're writing something in high fantasy or whatever, and it's not par for the course, that could be surprisingly sexy. Like, that can be something to mine.
Yeah, especially if you're going beyond that into maybe the realm of kink. I've had an interesting time writing characters who are kinky, like, in high fantasy, where they do not have the same language for it, and figuring out, like, what precedent there is in their society for kink, if there is any, or if this is very much something that those characters are figuring out from, like, only their personal experiences or personal preferences or whatever. And I think that helps me think through, why is it that these characters are drawn to this, or what is it in their lives that you can hearken back to or pull from to make that scene more emotionally connected to the work as a whole and to that character's arc?
Let's say you're writing something that really deeply reflects on the character's deepest, darkest thoughts or most intimate kink. Even if it's not my thing, if it's, you know, thoroughly expressed in the characterization and it's well written, it could be something that I'm actively not into. If it's well written in the story, I'm going to be like, holy shit, look at how fucking compelling this is and look at how well this is done. And I feel like that is one of the strengths of stuff that allows for erotic content that you might not necessarily see in fiction that is PG rated. I mean, yeah, a good writer can persuade an audience of almost anything, but when you're talking about something as intimate and personal as sex, and you have an author really just being evocative and being expressive, and it's something that isn't even in the audience's wheelhouse, like, that is a true achievement. I'm going to applaud every author who made me like something or at least admire something, even if I didn't particularly like it, who made me believe and admire something that I ordinarily wouldn't have.
I also feel like if you are somebody who writes fantasy or sci-fi or what have you, and also writes contemporary, I think those world building practices can be really interesting for contemporary as well, because it makes you check the assumptions that you might have, and it makes you look at our society and think, like, our society is actually really, really prescriptive about sex positions and about what sex positions are associated with who is having them, and it's very archaic in a lot of ways, but it's very, very much warped into the fabric of how we view sex. And if you can question those things, then I think with any characters, the more you can question your own assumptions about what is natural to them, the more you can authentically write what is unique to them and what it means to them. And it gives you a lot of emotional depth to kind of dive into, to say, like, maybe this person has always been told all their lives that they should enjoy X, but they actually really enjoy Y.
It's character detail and character introspection that you might not necessarily have access to in other contexts, which is why I think it's important to keep sex scenes grounded in characterization. Because if you have a character who is shy or anxious, whatever their temperament may be, if you come to a sex scene and it doesn't reflect that, or it doesn't find, you know, a new stone to turn over to look at a different side of that and reveal something surprising, like, this anxious person is actually incredibly confident in a sexual context, like, that could be something interesting. So it's one of those things where your sex scene should serve the characterization and should potentially reveal new sides of characters, because people are so multifaceted and sex is so weirdly shamed and yet celebrated in our culture that you're not really going to see what a person, you're going to have a fuller picture of the person if you do it correctly. And that's also to say, like, I feel, you know, a little bit bad because the focus of this episode has been so heavily on, like, you're actually writing explicit porn. There are people who do not like reading explicit porn. It's important to remember that not everyone is going to be into sex scenes or going to be into that sort of physical intimacy. And in this episode, I mean, we have mentioned, like, this isn't for everyone, and everybody has their sort of sliding scale of taste in terms of how much sex they like to read. But really, people who are Arrow and Ace are going to be maybe looking for the same things as people who are allosexual, but I don't know. I feel a little bit like we let our peeps down.
I mean, I'm really interested in talking about aromantic romance and, like, the potential for valuing types of intimacy that aren't romantic but are sexual. There's a place for every kind of sex scene in romance and in, well, there isn't a place for all kinds of sex scenes in erotica. Not Fade to Black, probably.
Yeah, probably.
But there is a place for all of that, and there's a readership for all of that. And if the impassioned arguments that me and Amanda have had recently have said anything, it's that even two folks who live together and are very good friends and, like, tend to enjoy each other's prose have vastly, vastly different preferences.
They're not vastly different.
They feel a little vastly different right now, Amanda. Okay. They're all equally valid and legitimate.
Say that with more confidence, Austin.
I do mean it. I mean it with all my heart. In future episodes, we're going to talk about kink more explicitly. And I'm sure we will have more podcasts specifically about sex scenes in the future, because that's such a romance as a genre, I think, is kind of the place where a lot of sex scenes go.
Yeah, and, like, sexy sex scenes, not like that weird literary fiction sex scene where we're like, whoa, okay.
Yeah, it's a genre convention in a way that it isn't, I think, for any other genre that I can think of. So there's definitely a lot to talk about there, both the presence of sex scenes and then the absence of them.
Yeah. And also, I mean, getting back to what I said about feeling like this doesn't adequately express the experience of Aero and Ace people, we are going to have an episode, it's probably several episodes, about Aero and Ace representation in queer romance. I'm really excited for that. I have a lot of things I want to talk about. I think that's our episode, guys. I think we did it. I think we successfully managed to wade through that fucking mire. And then, as always, I'm going to sign us off with two submission calls. I kind of randomly selected these out of presses I know except erotic romance because I feel like we spent a lot of time talking about explicit sex. So let's talk about places you can submit and publish explicit sex. The first one is Pride Publishing, which is a recently launched imprint from Totally Bound, and it accepts erotic romance. As always, check their submission guidelines, which will be linked in this episode description. The second is Evernight Publishing, which, full disclosure, I also work for. They, too, accept erotic romance, so please check out their submission guidelines, also linked. And many, if not most, queer romance publishers accept work with a high heat rating, and if you're actually not into that, if you're not into explicit sex scenes, check for presses that don't have a heat rating minimum, which some do. They may say, in order for you to publish with us, you need to write to a heat rating 1 or 2 or sizzling or whatever. So check that out. There's plenty of presses that don't have that, so look into it.
If you would like to continue this conversation with us on social media, we would love to talk about it all day, all night. You can find me on Twitter at Austin Chanted.
And you can find me on Twitter at Amanda H. Jean.
And that is our show.
This episode of The Hopeless Romantic was produced by Daria DeFour, with graphics by Keezy Young and music composed by Carly Ann Warden. Follow us on Twitter at TheHR Podcast, add us on Facebook, and please rate and review on iTunes if you enjoyed.